Father, I thank you for Peter, and I thank you for the journey that he's been on. I thank you for the joy that you have given him in his life. And I know that that's the joy that comes out of the trials that you've brought him through, the way that you have prepared his life, the way that you have helped him, given him courage to face the struggles and prepare his life to do the hard work and to become a real bloke. Father, I ask for all of us here that you will light a fire in our bones, just as you have in Peter, to do that hard work, to become better blokes, to stand up and say that we are champions, son of the kings. But also, Father, I ask that you speak to each one of us constantly, daily, to hear your voice saying, "You are my son, in whom I am well pleased." So be it.
God never ceases to amaze me. Just when you might got some things worked out, he does your head in. In preparation for this weekend, I'd been praying, and the Lord had just laid on my heart Matthew 5, which I'm going to share shortly, and a couple of specific conversations with blokes, they raised that passage with me. And then last night, Fred preached on Matthew 5. Go figure. So today we're going to talk about pursuit of holiness. We're picking up that after the fall, sexuality became distorted and needed redemption. And Christ offers restoration. I'm going to share just a couple of concepts. And then we're going to go with pick up a few bits and pieces of yesterday. And we'll get to some questions. So I think it's easy to put up this framework of going, before the big stuff up, this is how it was. After the stuff up, this is how it is. But this is why we struggle. We're wired for this side, but we live in that side. And that's why it's a struggle. And we need to get real with one another back in our communities and in our churches that, you know, to be a good bloke and to be a good bloke in the area of sexuality is a struggle. It is. And we'd be far better off if we actually could have, you know, shed men talks in our churches, right, when we can actually get honest about the struggles. The passage that God laid on my heart was Matthew 5, 27. "You've heard that it was said, you shall not commit adultery. But I tell you, anyone who looks at a woman lustfully has already committed adultery with her in his heart. If your eye causes you to stumble, gouge it out and throw it away. It's better to lose a part of your body than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. And if your right hand causes you to stumble, cut it off and throw it away. Better to lose a part of your body than your whole body go into hell." I want to give it in the message because I think the message is a little helpful in understanding this. So in the message it says this. You know the next commandment pretty well too. Don't go to bed with another man's spouse. But don't think you've preserved your virtue simply by staying out of bed. Your heart can be corrupted by lust even quicker than your body. Those leering looks you think nobody notices, they also corrupt. Let's not pretend this is easier than it really is. If you want to live a morally pure life, here's what you have to do. You have to blind your right eye the moment you catch it in a lustful leer. You have to choose to live one eye or else be dumped on the moral trash pile. And you have to chop off your arm the moment that you notice it's raised threatening. Better a bloody stump than the entire being discarded for good in the dump. And, you know, Jesus is not talking literally to do that, but what he says here is that holiness and sexual holiness is not easy. Holiness, and particularly sexual holiness, is not easy. And we shouldn't assume it is. And one of the things that do is when we stuff up, sometimes we actually beat ourselves up unnecessarily because somehow we think this should be easy. Now, I'm not saying it's It's not easy, so let's give up the battle or make excuses. What I'm saying is I want to put this into perspective. And, you know, Fred and I were just talking a moment ago, and there's guys here who have got some issues that they won't talk about, and the battle's not easy. And I'm not going to ask you to respond on this, but there's some of us here where, you know, before we got married, we got our woman pregnant, and then there was an abortion. And with that is that we have this dilemma that we know that it's wrong, but there's a whole heap of shame and fear, because there's shame and fear if we went with the pregnancy, and there's shame and fear if we actually talk about the abortion. And, you know, that's not easy. And then there's some of us who have, you know, been inappropriate with our kids. And some of us may have even been sexually inappropriate with our kids. And, you know, when I work with child sex offenders, the vast majority of them hate themselves. That's not something they want to do. And they go, I do this and I don't want to do it. And I go, well, welcome to what Paul wrote. The things I don't want to do, I do do. And the things I do want to do, I don't. Now, I'm just putting those out there and going to say, that's really, really hard stuff. And it may not be appropriate to share that sitting out the front in a shed man's experience, but we need to actually find a place where we go to somebody who's trusted and we can go, I need to talk about this. There are some things that need to be in private confession. But we need to talk about it, because this is not easy. Sexual holiness and purity is not easy, because we're wired to live before the big stuff up, but the reality is we're living after the big stuff up. So I want to share a couple of principles. I want to share a couple of principles, and then I'm going to do a bit of a free range, feed the chooks type thing, you know? You know, scatter the seed. Okay, we talked about masculinity. And I think that understanding authentic masculinity is the key to authentic sexuality. I think what happens is that we're all hardwired for strength, and sexual brokenness is often the pursuit of strength in the wrong place and the wrong way. We want something that's going to make me feel a strong bloke, but it is a rip-off. And the devil is the master at promising something that is a lie. This will make you feel strong. This will make you feel connected. This will make you feel good. And it does momentarily, but then as soon as it's gone, the guilt and shame comes in, and then we're trapped in this cycle where I feel worse about myself, and then I beat myself up, and then I need something to make me feel like strong, so I go back to what is easy. So, first of all, I want to say, the battle for sexual holiness is a battle for strength. The battle for sexual holiness is a battle for strength. And old Hairy Legs knows this. He knows it well. I want to talk about just a bit understanding sex drive, and then this will make a bit sense. So, I often get asked about differences, and the general differences for women's sex drive is that female sex drive is a bit like Mills and Boone's books. Now, some women get a bit offended about that, okay? But if Mills and Boons were to stop publishing books today, and you were going to read their library, and you were going to spend 2 hours reading a book, and you start reading now without stopping, it'll take you 250,000 years to read their library. It's huge. In fact, I would even say that romance addiction is probably bigger than pornography addiction. But it is socially acceptable. But what happens for women is they're longing for the perfect, intimate relationship with a strong man. And when they are in a desperate place, they go to the fantasy world of the perfect boy meets girl right off to the sunset and live happily ever after. Whereas for blokes, it's a bit different. Now, How does this extrapolate to female sex drive? Now, I'll give you another illustration. Yeah, I'll go to female sex drive first. That's a good one. Okay? Female sex drive is a very slow, slow start, and then it peaks, and then it is a slow resolution. And female sex drive is quite unique. In fact, females have a capacity for a much stronger sex drive than us blokes because they have the capacity for multiple orgasms. I got a joke about that. God was just about finished, done with his creating. And he comes to Adam and Eve and he says, I've got two things left in my bag of tricks. The first one is the capacity to stand vertically and pee. And Adam jumps up and down like a boy busting a pee, saying, oh, give it to me, that'd be so cool. I could write my name in the sand. Oh, that'd be so cool, I could see how far I could shoot it. Oh, that'd be just so cool. And Eve just rolls her eyes and says, oh, sounds like something he really wants. Just give it to him, God. So God blessed him with the capacity to relieve himself while in the vertical position. And like an excited little boy, he went down the nearest tree laughing with glee. God looks in his back and says, what's left in here? Multiple orgasms. Isn't it good to have a good, clean laugh about sexuality, eh? Yeah. Oh? Female sex drive, in average, from stimulation to orgasm, takes at least a minimum of 13 minutes, more often closer to 24, 25 minutes. And it's very, very slow. But when it gets going, you can't stop it. Now, most blokes don't know how to actually do that. Some blokes, when they get married 20, 30 years, they figure it out. And women tend to innately know more about human sexuality than blokes. But what happens is we get married and the blokes are supposed to be the one who knows everything about sex. But in fact, intuitively, naturally, women know more than blokes. So the thing is, we can learn a lot about sex and sexuality from our wives. They just don't know it. Okay. Bloke sex drive's more like this. Get up and go, very fast, very, very fast. But more importantly, it's visually stimulated. Whereas a woman is not stimulated visually. So what happens is most blokes have actually got out of the shower and go, oh, look at this, babe. You know? And she rolls her eyes and goes, yeah, whatever, saw it yesterday. Whereas if I actually want to win my wife's heart, is that, you know, I go and buy a bunch of, finarily, long stem yellow roses. And I sneak up to the door and I ring the doorbell and open it and I go, da-da, these are for you, sweetheart. Sparklers. Why? Because her man loves her. Her man has invested his hard-earned cash to buy something important to her and has not bitched about it. And if I say, sweetheart, been away for the weekend, how about we leave Beck at home and you and I go out for dinner? Overdrive. Because it's about relational connection. It's about intimacy. Women intuitively know more about intimacy, knowing and being known, than most of us blokes. The reason, because most of us is visually stimulated. So what happens is... just trying to look after the voice this morning. It was a big day yesterday. So what happens is that you've had a bit of an argument. You sort of sort out the argument. You walk into the bedroom and she gets undressed and you go, oh, how about it, babe? And she goes, are you brain dead or something? We just spent 2 hours arguing and now you want to have sex. It's because we're visually stimulated. They're relationally stimulated. And our visual stimulation is by what we see with our eye or our mind's eye, which is why pornography is such a struggle. And that's why they use sex in advertising, because we are visually stimulated. And we get imprints on our brain. Now, the Blake's graph is a bit like this. It's very fast in its start, and the resolution is very fast. And the average from start to orgasm is 2.8 minutes. So let me overlap those two graphs. Do you see the problem? So many blokes are wham, bam, thank you, man. She hadn't even got the handbrake off and got into first gear. And then she says, well, if that's what sex is about, forget it. Now, here's a tip that's really important, and this is going to apply to sexual holiness. See that dotted line? In high levels of arousal, men have phenomenal control. We're not taught this. We're not told this. Popular culture doesn't tell us this. But guys can go right to the point of ejaculation, and if they want to, they can stop. Whereas for women, in high levels of arousal, they lose control. So if I can use my control, my strength, my discipline, what I can do is that I can regulate how fast I'm going with stuff so that we can actually slow it down so that I can actually be more in sync with her rather than her trying to be in sync with me, which is never going to happen, or be gratified. And so this is the point I want. As blokes, we have phenomenal control over our sexuality, our sexual function, and our sex drive. But we're not told that. And when I talk to high school kids about this, I go, guys who don't exercise self-control are not real men. They are little boys who are being selfish and immature. Because it's all about them getting what they want. It's not about servant leadership. It's not about sacrifice. It's not about mutuality. So first of all, I want to say, God has given us the capacity to be in control of our sex drive and our sexuality. It is innate in us as blokes. I'm not saying it's easy, but it's doable. So that's the first principle. We have been blessed with incredible control that actually makes this a much easier battle to win. Okay, next concept we're going to talk about. I talked about this last year in the elective I did on pornography. And just really quickly, I'm just going to put this up. It's that Dr. Helen Fisher, who is an anthropologist, a biological anthropologist. So what she does basically is she takes people and she puts their heads into functional MRIs and does brain scans to find out what chemicals are going on in their brains. So her first major research was defining out what chemicals were triggered with love. And she identified three types of love. There's lust, there's romantic love, and then there's attachment love, which is what we would call commitment love. And she discovered there are different chemicals for them. And the chemicals that go with lust and with romantic love, they play in together. But they're often short-lived. And when attachment love comes in, and oxytocin and this other hormone comes in, is that the other stuff fades away, can't be matched. But we have a culture that is addicted to lust and romantic love, and we've actually trained our brains to think that's the real deal. And it ain't. And Helen Fisher's latest work is that she's working with married couples who have been married 25 years or more and who still love and like each other. And she's scanning their brains to find out what chemicals are going on in their brain that actually make enduring love last at least 25 years. I'm looking forward to that research. So what we need to be doing is really careful is that, hang on a minute, Hairy Legs wants to put all this pretense out of lust and romance and say it's the real deal when it's not. Commitment love's the real deal. But commitment love is hard work. I've chatted with a few of the younger guys who are going, oh, marriage is hard. The woman I love, I don't particularly like at the moment. And I go, been there, brother. Been there. But the good news is there's stuff the other side of it. Because commitment love can't be matched. But what we have is we have a culture addicted to quick fixes, cheap intimacy, battle for strength. Yep.
Oxytocin is also the hormone released when a woman gives birth.
Yep.
It's that attachment.
It's all attachment. Yep.
So the same kind of attachment that a woman has for a child.
Yep.
Can be formed between a man and a woman.
You betcha. And that's why, you know, when you actually have those moments where you have meaningful, connected sex, it's like you're in this spiritual place that you're with her and she's with you, and you just go, that's far better than orgasm.
It's like being home.
It's like being home. The example for me was, and this is pretty freaky, one Saturday night, Neralee and I had a particularly pleasant and erotic sexual encounter. And the next morning was a communion service. And as I was preparing for communion, my mind kept going back to the night before. And I'm going to myself, come on, PJ, it's communion. Stop thinking about sex. And then I sensed the Holy Spirit say, go with the thought. So I went with the thought. And then God impressed upon me, he said, Peter, the passion that you had for Neralee last night, that's the passion I have for you. And that's the passion I want you to have for me. Man, oh man, I've never had a communion service like that ever. It was just a mind blow. And then when I got out into the car, I said to Neralee, sweetheart, I had a really strange experience before communion today. And as I started to talk, her face lit up and said, me too. And it was like, wow, this oxytocin connection. That was not just the night before. Here we are at church and it's still going. No. The oxytocin did this. The sexuality didn't, in one sense. No, not the MG. Not the MG. Not the MG. So that's the really rich stuff. Now, what happens is that when we come to deal with sexual brokenness, is that most of us actually focus on the fruit. And the fruit, what we do is we pick the fruit off, cut the fruit off, but effectively what we're doing is pruning the tree. And what happens when you prune a tree? It grows back and produces more fruit. So the strategy that we've used in the church doesn't work. But that's the first strategy we go to because, you know, that's all we know. Now, there's a time to actually deal with the fruit, but we've got to deal with the root issues. And under sexual brokenness, the root issues are my sense of identity as a person, as a man, the lack of intimacy or intimacy failures, particularly in our experience with connecting with our fathers and being over-connected with our mothers when our mothers don't let go. I upset my mum shortly after I was married. I said to her, Mum, there's only room for one significant life and it ain't you. Because my mum, in the dysfunctionality of her relationship with my dad, is that she looks to her children to meet the need that we're not meant to meet. For this reason, a man shall? What's the shadow side of that for the parents?
Let go.
But I found yet, I haven't found yet, a man struggling with sexual brokenness that has an absent father or a disconnected father and a mother who's tried to compensate or be over-involved. So their understanding of their masculinity, their understanding of intimacy is a bit arse about. The last one is adequacy, and particularly when we feel inadequate, when I feel lonely, halt.
So when we're actually predisposed to acting out or feeling... Dazzler brought it to me about 5 years ago, halt. So when you're hungry, H, A for angry, L for lonely, or T for tired. You know, you actually have to stop and think, what am I doing? So stop, halt. Are you hungry for something? Are you angry about something? Are you lonely? Or are you tired? Or is it a combination of everything? And if we're going to act out, it's generally because of something that's going on. So we have to stop and think deeper. Hang on, what's the root cause of this?
And that's a great way of remembering. Am I hungry? Am I angry? Am I lonely? Am I tired? Fatigue is a great time when the hairy legs tackles us with sexual issues.
Actually, you can end on the end of it, S, for stressed.
Stress. Thanks, J.A. And I just think that, you know, when we're tired, when we're hungry, when we're angry, when we're lonely, when we're stressed, is that our inadequacy goes up, our sense of disconnection increases, our identity is challenged, and we look for a quick fix. And yet, working with sex addicts, working with child sex offenders, working with porn addicts, is that I work on the root issues, and I've seen lives transformed. And I'm going to share some practical tips in a moment about that. And I don't worry about the fruit. The fruit generally takes care of itself when you deal with the root. And so I want to shift the focus that when we struggle, we actually need to come back to. And my experience as I've journeyed in my own life with this is that as my level of intimacy with other men has increased, and as my level of intimacy with Neroli has increased, and as my identity has strengthened, temptations actually get fewer and I'm better at managing it. But when the temptations come thick and fast, normally I'm tired, fatigued, exhausted, something else is going on. For those who did the stress workshop with me, this is why about a balanced lifestyle is so important. Okay. You look like you want to ask a question there. No, you're just taking a big breath. Okay, so I want to come to being, and I'm going to talk about some strategies in five dimensions of being, okay? But I'm going to start down the bottom. First thing is, I'm going to start here and I'm going to finish here. First thing is, when we stuff up, we actually need to get sorted with God. The first place we need to go is go to the Lord and confess to the Lord. We need to go and sort that out. And then we need to find a trusted brother that we go to and confess to. As many of you know, that when you start to tell your story, you get clean. And let me tell you, one of the things that I love last night and I love last year is confession and absolution. And I go to a Baptist church these days, and as I travel around the country talking in different churches, most evangelical churches don't have confession and absolution. And let me tell you, is it's very easy when you're sitting in your Lutheran church to just take it as this is what we do as a normal practice and just do it brain dead. Let me tell you, that is a very important practice. It is so important to be able to come and confess and then have Jason stand here on behalf of Jesus and in the name of Jesus say, you're forgiven. You're forgiven. One of the guys I worked with who struggled with sex addiction, he was from Pentecostal background. Churches said that he was evil. He experienced the worst of sexual abuse that I've ever heard in my life. And that's part of what he was acting out. And I connected him with an Anglican priest. So every time he acted out, the first thing he did is he went to confession, absolution and communion, one-on-one with the priest. That was the first thing he did. Because he needed to know that it was okay with the Father. Let me tell you a story about Raja. I was going to save this then, but I'm going to do it now because it's appropriate. Raja's a little Indian boy. And Raja was employed by a very wealthy Indian master to look after his ducks and chooks. And like any boy, you know, in your life, you've got to make a shanghai, a slingshot. And so he puts some rocks in and he's, you know, shooting stuff. And then he grabs this big gibber of a rock and he puts it in and he goes, rainmaker. Up and 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 up. And then down and down and down and down and down and down. Plonk. Right on the prize duck's head. Dead. So as a little taco, he has a look around and goes, oh crap, I'm in big shit here. So as a look, nobody's looking, I'll take the duck and bury it behind the shed and pretend I don't know what happened. A few weeks later, it was his day off, he asked the master if he could go downtown. And so he got dressed to go downtown and he's walking out the pathway. And the cook, who was a nasty piece of work, had a big scar on his face. And he says, Raja, where are you going? Raja said, I'm going downtown for a day off. And he said, I saw the duck. Come here. And the cook put him in the kitchen washing up dishes all day while he sat on his bum and read the paper. few weeks later, Raja had another day off, friend's birthday party. He's getting dressed to go to the birthday party. He walks out the pathway. Out comes the cook and goes, "Remember the duck? Come here." Missed the birthday party in the kitchen washing up dishes. A few weeks later, his sister's wedding. He asks for the time off. He's dressed for his sister's wedding. He's walking out the pathway, and the cook goes, "Raja, remember the duck? Come here." Now, this went on for months. And every time it happened, the weight of shame and guilt sat on his shoulders, heavier and heavier and heavier. And then one day he's in the kitchen washing up, and the old cook hand comes up to Roger and he says, "Hey, boy, what are you down in the mouth about?" And it's just one of those moments, you know, when it's the right moment, you just spill your guts. Raja spilled his guts, Shanghai duck, burying it, the whole lot. And after he pulled his heart out with tears, the old cook hand said, "Go and tell the master, he's a fair man. It's got to be better than this." So Raja plucked up the courage and he went upstairs and he knocked on the master's door and he said, "Master, I'm here to tell you something. I'm actually here to confess that several months ago I was mucking around in Shanghai and I actually accidentally killed your prize duck." Looking down the ground, kicking his feet in the carpet, the master said, "I know." Raja was gobsmacked. "How'd the master know?" And the master said, "I was standing on the veranda. I could see you, but you couldn't see me. And I've been waiting for you to come and talk to me about it." Raja just pulled his heart out and said, "Master, every day off for the last several months, I've worked in the kitchen." And the master said, "Yeah, I know. You've paid for the duck. It's okay. You've done enough punishment." Raja felt like a ton of bricks lifted off, and he said, "Master, would it be too much to ask if I could have the afternoon off? I've not had any time off in months." And the master smiled and said, "Yeah, sure. Go and take the afternoon off. Kick back and have some fun. You've learnt your lesson." Because the master was a gracious and merciful man. Raja got dressed because he was going to do some serious partying. And he's walking. No, he's not walking. He's strutting down the pathway, heading for town, and out comes the mealy-faced, nasty cook. He says, "Raja, where are you going? Remember the duck?" And Raja turned on his heel, and he walked up to the cook, and he looked him square in the eyes, and he said, "Go to hell, the master knows." He spun around his heel and he went down and had a party. The cook is hairy legs. His job is to be the accuser, to point his finger. The problem is we agree with him. The problem is we give him the power because we don't go to the master. And the remedy to hairy legs is to look him in the eyes and tell him to go to hell. The master knows. And if the master of the universe says it's okay, it's okay. So the first thing is we actually have to deal with the spiritual realm of getting right with the master. That's the first thing. Let me come back up to social and relational things, the neighbor things. If intimacy failure is one of the issues, and if identity is one of the issues, for us as blokes, the best remedy for intimacy failures is to build authentic intimacy with other blokes. Every bloke that I work with who has sexual brokenness, I expect them to build a strong, honest, open, intimate relationship with other blokes. And if I'm dealing with guys with homosexual stuff, it actually has to be non-sexual, of course. But for most blokes, bloke-to-bloke relationships don't involve sex. But hey, I love being hugged binarily. But isn't there something special about having a bloke hug? Yeah, different but great. And it's just something in me. You know, when Wado gives me a big hug, there's something in me that just goes, oh, that's good. Sorry, BJ.
Breathe again.
Breathe again. Yeah, he does got a big grip, hasn't he? Because if, for most of us, that some of our sexual brokenness is about father wound, then the remedy is for men and the community of men to step in the gap. So we need to have really strong, intimate male-male relationships. And then in our female relationships, we actually need to build strong, intimate relationships. And the best key for this is learning to look into rather than look at. Because we are visually stimulated, the tendency is to look at. And you young blokes, when you meet some hot chick, don't look at her tits. She knows. Look her in the eyes. I'll tell you the truth. Suss this out. Go home and ask your sisters and your mums. Every woman knows when some bloke is ogling and perving on her and she doesn't have to see him. Their skin automatically crawls. I've asked this of thousands of women. I was at a women's conference and I put it out there and every woman in the world said, "You're a strange man. You get this." When a woman's being ogled and reduced to an object and not a person, there is something in her spirit that cringes and goes, ugh. And I think that goes back to what I was talking about after the stuff up, after the fall, is now they didn't look at each other the way that God looked after. They looked at the other as an object for the satisfaction of my lust. And women know it. Women know when they're actually being looked at inappropriately. They don't even have to look at your eyes. So you young guys, stop looking at boobs. Look at eyes. Now, I'm really honest. I like boobs. I love my wife's boobs. I love her legs. In fact, I love everything of her. All right? But there's a time and place. There's a time and place. And I have a lot of women that I work with and talk with that go, "You are so intense in looking in our eyes because I want to see them. I don't want to look at them." And the Jesus I know, when he met the woman at the well, he didn't look at her like the rest of society. He looked into her and saw her thirstiness and her spiritual longing, which she was looking through stuffed up relationships. But the rest of the community looked at her and said, "Oh, immoral, bad person." That one thing about looking into rather than looking at is very, very important for cultivating healthy intimacy. And so when I see an attractive young woman, and because I'm an observer of life, I go, "Thank you, God, for this attractive young woman. Would you look after her? Would you protect her? She is somebody's daughter. She will be somebody's wife. Would you protect her from the corruption of our world that would want to exploit her personhood and her body?" I love women. I love beauty. But how dare I have an exploiting mindset about this, because that's an insult to them and to God. So I need to actually work at building intimacy with our women, and particularly my main woman. That then goes into thinking, because when I do the thinking, then I can catch my thinking and I can take thoughts captive and I can cultivate right thinking. This is not easy. This is very, very hard. Now, for some blokes who are struggling with getting their thinking right because they've got a head full of crap that they can't get rid of, here's the simplest thing to do. You know the rubber bands that the posties use to wrap around their envelopes when they're doing it in the post? Get one of those red wide rubber bands and stick it on your wrist. And every time you have a thought that you shouldn't have, is that that's connected to the pleasure sensor on your brain to fire off those chemicals that I had up there before. So instead of feeding it, take the rubber band and go, flick. And put pain with that thought, not pleasure. And when that wrist is sore, put it on that wrist. And when that one's sore, put it on your ankle. I wasn't, Sal, I wasn't. And by the time that ankle's sore, you can go back to your wrist, okay? See, what we know from neuroplasticity and brain science is that if this neuron fires here and it's connected to this one, it's like a wiring. And the more you use it, the more it is wired. But if you break the connection, the wiring eventually breaks and you can wire to a new connection. But it takes about 1,000 repetitions. So the renewing of our mind in the area of sexual wholeness is hard work. And I have to catch when my thoughts are going down the wrong pathway, or when something comes up on the TV, I've got to turn it off, or I've got to go, hang on, wrong thought, change my thought. And for some blokes who have actually got sexual obsessions, they actually need to use the rubber band. And when somebody says, what you're doing, you just go, no, I'm just doing a brain training activity. But the rest of us brothers will know. And we might come up beside you and say, how's it really going? Can I pray for you? So thinking is absolute pivotal. And the worst thing is that we feed our thinking. We feed our thinking because we take a second and a third look. We've got to deal with the first look. Yep. They're compound emotions, and they probably need a little bit different strategy. Okay? Okay, this is really to go with just... Because sexuality is such a strong pleasure drive, and that's why this one works for that. But for compound emotions, anger is a compound emotion, and there's a bit more to that. Okay? All right. So, one look that catches my eyes, okay, the second look undoes me. The third look, I'm trapped. Now, you would have seen some movies. If you saw Pirates of the Caribbean 4, and I've watched a couple of movies, you know, mermaids were the sirens, and the sailors used to hear them sing, but the problem was that they would pretend as a pretense to be the love of their life and then seduce them into the water and drown them and kill them. That's what the mermaids and the sirens did. We have a whole range of sirens and mermaids out there that seduce us into something we desire, and the second look is the entry point. The third look is I am seduced. So it's okay to have one look, but then I've got to take my mind captive and go, stop it. Now, the more you do this, the easier it gets with practice and time. Just like learning to drive a car. Remember when you learn to drive a car, it's a bit all feet and hands and, you know, whereas now most of you drive the car and you don't even remember how you got to the place you're going to. You did it on automatic pilot. Repetition will make this easier. Emotional being. I'm going to come back to hungry, angry, lonely, tired, and stress. If we're not emotionally well, we're going to be prone to looking for things that are a quick fix. If our relationships are not emotionally healthy. So therefore, one of the things that I love about Shed Men is that we give it from the guts and we get emotional. I love that. And too often in our history is that, you know, we're German or Northern European and we don't show emotions. Well, that's costly. Ecclesiastes says, weep with those who weep, mourn with those who mourn, party with those who party. We need to actually be emotional. And that's one of the things that I think is so great about Shed Men. And for me, for it to come from the Lutheran Church, I go, wow, this is fantastic. And let's have a movement Australia-wide where blokes can get real about emotions and start to be emotionally connected with one another and more emotionally connected with our women, because this is one of the remedies and the protections against the temptations of the world that want to rip us off from holiness. Physical being is really important about our boundaries. We have to have really strong boundaries. We need to know where our weaknesses are and our vulnerabilities. I say to the guys that I work with who have got all different sorts of addictions in the sexual area, I say, think of the city wall. Imagine you're in a city and it's a walled city. The city wall is, there's a breaking point in the wall that's been deteriorated because of your addiction. But now when we repair the wall, you have to put extra guards there because the enemy always attacks the weakest point. So you have to have boundaries. Boundaries on physical touch, boundaries on what you do. So I've actually got a whole heap of boundaries about touch, affection, and see, I'm a bit like Watto. I'm a really tactile touch person. I'm really affectionate. I love giving affection. But you know what? I'm really careful about touch with other women. I'm really careful about the boundaries that I set about what I talk about with other women. I'm really careful about it. I've got one friend. Unfortunately, she's been divorced. She desperately wants to be married. And I've got to tell you is that she's one of these women that craves a man to love her. And so she's got this really strong sexual presence because she wants a man to love her. I don't have coffee with her. I can hook you up, self. And I got brothers who are looking for somebody, you know, I can hook them up. But I say to her, listen, I'll come for coffee with so-and-so. She says, oh, no, I just want to have coffee with you. And I won't have coffee with you. I don't say, I won't have coffee with you. I say, I'm not available. How about I come this time with so-and-so? I always got a way around it because I'm not going to say I'm not having coffee with you because I don't want her to feel rejected. But it is unwise for me to have coffee with her. And why? Because I know that I could be attracted to her. Right? One of my mentors, he and I don't agree with him, but he said in his early days he was really attracted to a woman that wasn't his wife, so he offended her so she'd have nothing to do with him. I thought, that's a bit rough, isn't it? But he's that sort of bloke, you know. Whereas I go, where are the physical boundaries in my life with what I watch, with what I take in, with my eye gate, in my relationship with others? And I sit in office counselling women every day. Counsel husbands and wives, counsel women on their own, counsel men on their own. I have to deal with a whole heap of women professionally. I have a whole heap of students that I teach. And so when I'm teaching my uni students, is that, you know, we actually do one-on-one interviews. So I spend a lot of time one-on-one with a lot of gorgeous young women. But I'm really clear about my physical boundaries. Because it is not easy to pursue holiness, but it's doable. Am I get it perfect? No. When I stumble, I go back to the Father, talk to the Master, get it sorted, and I start again.
Those boundaries you're talking about,
yep.
The range of how easy they are, sometimes hard, or, you know, this is easy because, yep. You know, they don't feel like a should and I have to. They're actually in place and it's not a hard thing. The choice isn't hard.
No. Yeah. And the thing that motivates for me is I think of my love for Marilyn. That I really love this woman, and this is part of my honouring her.
Yeah, no, I think for me that's been the focus when I was thinking, oh, this is what I should, the boundaries. I get caught up in thinking of,
yep.
I got to this, and then I'm in thinking of the flesh anyway.
Yep, and shoulds don't help. This is what I want to do. And I want to do this because of these reasons. Shift it from shoulds and have tos to I want this. I want to be a godly man. I want to honour my wife. And therefore, this is what I'm going to do because this is what I want to do. Not because I have to. The moments I have to or should, I'm going to fight against it. All right? Good comment. Any other questions or comments?
Yeah, Peter, what you were saying about... you know, this rubber band thing, I read a ripper book last year before I came to Better Blokes, and part of my battle, it's not so much been sexual addiction, but I love women too, and I think, you know, I look at them, I would drive down the street and you'd see some young lady running down the street and you couldn't take your eyes off her. And I would try like crazy not to Google her, because sometimes I'd have my son beside me, I think that's not healthy for him to see that. But this book absolutely belted me open. I don't use a rubber band, but it taught me a couple of things, and what you just pointed out was one of them, and I just wanted to say it dead set works, where if you feel like you have to do it, it doesn't work. But this book talked about what sort of bloke do you want to be? And it talked in words of, do you want to be a good man or do you want to be a valiant man? And I want to be a man of God. I want to walk down the street, and I don't want people to say how great he is. I want them to say, something that guy's got, I want. So it taught me to bounce my eyes,
yeah,
and to look at my life, my wife, in a different way. So I listened to what you have said over the years, and what Wado and other blokes have said about, I want to see my wife, not only as my queen, but but the most attractive woman to me. I don't want to see anybody else like that. Now, all those things put together in Dead Set Fellas, it works, but it's hard work, and you've got to do it. But if you go home and you don't think you've got any hope and you give up, it's a bit like reading the Bible. If you go home and you think, I can't do it, get somebody that you're accountable with, and we've talked about this stuff, about getting a few blokes, send a text, tell them you're doing it tough, and have the guts to be honest. And it just seems to work. It just works.
Just something I'd point out, I've always had a terrible weakness for women. Absolutely loved the odd look of them. Found them enormously attractive and gone right down the wrong road way too many times. Two broken marriages because of it. It's a big question of your integrity. I feel that it's probably my major challenge now, and I'm probably winning that battle, but the more you come to know God, and the more your heart's healed, and the more your spirit becomes well again, there's also a paradox in that, because you find that the more that process takes place, the more these women are actually drawn to you.
Yep.
And yeah.
Like steel to a magnet.
Yeah, and that's just another challenge, you know.
Yep. And let me pick up on that for some of the guys. At Easterfest, we've been doing Shed at Easterfest now 4 years or 5 years? 4 years. One of the blokes who lives in Toowoomba, where Easterfest is, and Easterfest is a music festival, but in the midst of this big music festival, we got a tent and the boys run Shed, you know. And one of the guys who's been coming to Shed for the 4 years has been struggling with sexual addiction, impacted his marriage, and we catch up with him every year. And I said to him last year, and I made a comment again this year, is that the more that you cultivate the right sort of fantasies and experiences with your wife, the easier it is to take the yuck stuff captive. Because what happens is that you're outweighing the negative with the positive. All right? And this bloke, Rodney's his name, and he came and shared to me, and he said, you're right. He said, for the first time, he said, I've been having all this wonderful stuff with my wife, and I've actually got all these memories and experiences now that are actually starting to override all the crap experiences. Now, does he not have the crap experience memories? No, they still come. But he's able to go, that's crap, I'm going to think about this. So the more we build the pre-fall stuff, the easier it is to manage the post-fall stuff. But it's hard yards. But it's doable.
When you've been saying how hard it is, hard yards, I've been saying no. It hasn't been hard for us, for me and my wife. And part of the reason, only part of the reason, was that we had a very whirlwind romance. We made a conscious decision that we would remain chaste. We took risks. We skated over ice that was so thin we were just about walking on water. But we were both virgins when we married.
Yeah.
And that was a huge investment. When there's times when your wife is pregnant and, you know, hormonal things happen, you know, you've got that to go back on. And when I was thinking about that, I was thinking that the reason we're able to do that was, you know, we had a, you know, one look at each other and that was it, lifelong commitment. And when you've got a lifelong commitment, then you're in a position that you can wait those extra few months.
Waiting till marriage, was that hard yards?
It was and it wasn't.
Yeah.
We took risks.
Yeah.
You know, there were times when each of us had to say, hey, we're putting the brakes on. But we already had that commitment.
Yeah.
And we'd made that conscious decision. And then that made it possible and good.
And I want to say, that's a great point for the young guys. The rewards of choosing to wait to marriage are benefits for the 50, 60 years of marriage. Our culture says you can't wait, you miss out. And I go, so what if you've got to wait 20, 30 years? You're going to have 50 or 60 years to catch up. But the rewards of that is you don't have the crap in the road. But there are plenty of blokes here who know what it's like to have the crap in the road. And that makes it really hard yards. So you've got to do hard yards one way or the other. You make tough decisions and say, I'm going to wait, and there will be some hard yards in that, but if it's committed, you'll have a lot of blessing in that too. Or you have hard yards of trying to sort out crap later. I wish I could give you an alternative easy go, but it ain't. So I want to challenge you young blokes who aren't married to think about that.
Peter, for those of us who do have the crap in our minds, one thing that I have found to be really powerful is not... Confession is really important. Bringing it out into the light is really important. But you find that those images stick. They have spiritual power. We actually have the authority as people who belong to Jesus to use the power of his name to break the spiritual bonds. Mm. And the way that we do that is by renouncing those images that are in our mind. And you might be walking along the street or something might be happening. Image flashes into your mind. Say aloud, in Jesus' name, I renounce this image and I break its power over me by his blood shed on the cross. Incredibly powerful. And then what I also do is I say, Jesus, would you please stand between me and that image? And he does.
Sex is not a need. Sex is not a need. It is a drive. It's a desire. It's a want. And the second thing is coming to grips. And I had to do this. Is that as I was confronting my red zone growth with Nerolate, and it was very difficult because once you start doing some growth, it gets worse first because you've got to wrestle with tension. And I'm saying, these are the things I want to talk about. This is the things I'd like in our relationship. And she's sort of rolling over and saying, drop dead. You know? I had to face the reality of, if I never had sex again, can I be okay? And when I came to a place of going, I love this woman, I don't want to live without sex, but if I have to, I'll be okay. And that tames the tiger. Because it puts sex in its right place. That sex is about an expression of intimacy. It's not about getting off. And then when you start to do that, it opens up the door for much richer, healthy eroticism and passion in relationship. And so if you want to read about this, the book to read on this, and maybe this is what I need to do, is do some books in a moment before we wrap up, is Intimacy and Desire. Intimacy and Desire by Dr. David Snarch. S-C-H-N-A-R-C-H. S-C-H. N-A-R-C-H, and it's a non-Christian evolutionist sex therapy marriage book, and he's talking about sex, but he's talking about what goes on in our red zone, because the black zone is sex. So intimacy and desire, and if you actually Google intimacy and desire, you can find an article that talks about the four points of balance. So you don't have to read the whole book, just get the Google article, it's two pages. All right, intimacy and desire.
You know how you're bringing those different stages, like the lust and the romance and then the intimacy. In your initial phase, like, you know, just say, for example, boy meets girl, okay, you know, you feel physically attracted to a woman,
yep.
Okay, because, not just because what the size of her tits are or, you know, she's got great hips or whatever, but you see that beauty in that lady because of how she's basically the way she is. You look at her hair, you see all those other... integral parts as well.
Yep.
So you're not just focusing on the, you know, the two bits of the, you know, those.
Yep.
But and so do you believe that it's healthy to have that as well, because that's what God has given innate, as you said, is innate within us as males.
Yep.
To enjoy, to see, to appreciate. Without lust, I'm not talking about lusting, I'm talking about appreciating
yep.
a woman in her
physique. It's a starting point.
Yeah.
But you've got to go way beyond that.
Yeah, I understand that point, right. What you're making, but then you're saying that then you've got the romance coming in,
yep.
and when you start entering a relationship with a female, you've got to have also that initial romance as well, because they enjoy that.
Some chemical connection.
That's what I'm saying, yeah, so I'm just sort of... Yeah.
But it's not the be-all and the end-all.
Oh, I understand that, yeah.
Our culture That's, makes it the be-all
I'm
and
not,
the end-all.
Yeah, I'm not saying that. I'm not trying to promote that. All I'm trying to say is that you're going to go through these various stages, and that's what I'm just... Yeah. That's what
well,
I'm
let me just freak out the young guys here, who the young men here are not married yet. If you think some girl is cute, have a look at a mum, because that's what she'll look like in 20 or 30 years. And most of the young boys go, oh, crap. Yeah, but here's the good news. When you get to that stage, it's not going to matter, because you're going to have something so richer. All right? Was there another question? No.
Yeah, Peter, my wife's probably going to go to the sisterhood camp. Any chance you can go along too? Because there's stuff here our wives need to know about. Do they have speakers like you coming along? Is it?
I've got no idea, but I have done a couple of women's conferences, and that's been really profound for them to hear from a man about sexuality and this healthy stuff and to understand. Because a lot of our Christian women, you know, one of the problems that I said about having the lights on for a lot of our Christian women is that they actually feel insecure. They don't think they're sexy enough, or if they do think they're sexy enough, they think there's something wrong. And that's their red zone issue. And we need to tell them, you're drop dead gorgeous. And one of the things you've got to do is if you're actually telling your wife she's gorgeous and she's beautiful, there's only one reply, that's thank you. And if she doesn't give you thank you, you go, there's only one reply, thank you. And then you go, I want you to know you're drop dead gorgeous. And if she doesn't say thank you, you go, there's only one acceptable reply, that's thank you. Hey, sweetheart, you're absolutely gorgeous.
Thank you.
And then... Right on cue, Leon. Right on cue. Right on cue. And when they say thank you, last night I spoke to my youngest daughter answered her mum's phone, and she said, how was your day? And I said, it was really cold this morning. It was really icy, but it was really beautiful. I said, but not as pretty as you. And her reply was, thanks, Dad. Because that's actually about them taking it on and celebrating their beauty. But they've not been taught to do that. We play a role in teaching that. But you're right. Sisterhood, if they want to invite me down, I'd love to come.
Just one more comment on being a better bloke. My wife and I sat down and watched a couple of episodes of Please Marry My Boy, and that's a scary show.
Is it what?
Boy,
it's terrible. It's terrible.
Yeah.
Mother's going to choose.
It's the truth.
Okay, can we do one more question and then I'm going to do book titles? Is that all right? And then I'm going to pray. And we're because of time, okay?
Yeah, look, I know this is recorded and we've got the slideshows that are going on the internet. So is it appropriate that we do sit down with our wives and go through this stuff and as conversation starters?
For sure. If she's open to it, give her an invitation to do that. But don't force it. Okay, invite her to say, I'd like to do this and see what she does, okay? Now, the best book on sex that I've read in Christian literature is What Wives Wish Their Husbands Knew About Sex. Okay, What Wives Wish Their Husbands Knew About Sex. It's written by three Christian therapists, can't remember their names, and it is a thin little book that is really readable, okay? So What Wives Wish Their Husbands Knew About Sex is probably the best book by Christians on sex. Okay. There's another book that's really hard to get hold of by Richmond Rickard Bell. All right, and he was a doctor in Sydney. And his life work as a GP has been on sexuality, and it's called Loving Sex, isn't it? I think the title. Paul, where are you? Loving Sex? Loving Sex. It's a big... Yeah, it's a big, thick book, but the print's big too. And there's pictures, appropriate pictures. And he's a Christian, so by Richmond Rickard Bell, that's a hard book to get hold of. Okay, get on a Coorong and see if they're getting more. If you're a young bloke and you're getting married, How to Kick Your Sex Life Off to a Great Start is an excellent book. How to Kick Your Sex Life Off to a Great Start. There are a whole heap of books in terms of sexual brokenness. An older book that is very helpful with sexual brokenness is Sexual Sanity by Earl Wilson. Sexual Sanity. And he talks about sex in an insane world and how do we actually get moved from insane sexuality to sane sexuality. It's an older book, but it's very good. There have been copious amounts of books written on sex addiction. And I think if you're looking for a book on a specific title, please email me, okay? And I'll see what I can pull out of the archives in the brain. That's probably all I've got there at the moment because I'm a bit spent, so... Oh, Christopher West. Christopher West has got a book that is questions
answers to questions or something, blah, blah, blah. If you search Christopher West and look for, and it's a thin book where it's question and answer, and it's written from a Catholic perspective. And so it's really quite, you know, talks about annulment of marriage, and there's some things that I don't theologically agree with, but it's a good book. There's some really good stuff in it, quite easy to read. So Christopher West, answers to questions about sex and Catholics or something like that it is, all right? Nonviolent Communication by Marshall Rosenberg, and that's actually, it's actually talking about anger and conflict, but it talks about the shift from shuddukud to wantos. And some of this is about shifting our perspective to emotional, intellectual, spiritual maturity. All right, very good. Okay. Sex God by Rob Bell. Yes, Man to Man series or the Valiant Man series. Now, it's not a book, but if the church is running Valiant Man, it's a bit, you know, academic a little bit, but I've had, you know, some of the God Squad guys in my church have done it and found it really helpful. So Valiant Man and Man to Man series by Alan Meyer. And I saw that Alan Meyer's got his Valiant Man book out on the bookstore. Okay? Okay? I'm going to pray. I wish there was more time. I hope that's been really helpful for you blokes. For me, like I said, I've had this on my heart for a year as a follow-up to last year. So we'd had some honest conversations about the outworking of being a great bloke. All right. So first of all, let me say thank you for having me along and thank you for your incredible responsiveness and your conversations. I really appreciated that. And a lot of you come and said, you know, give me lots of affirmation. I want to say thank you for that. Let me pray. Would you join with me in prayer? Father God, what a joy and a delight it has been for me to be here with brothers from right around this great land of ours to talk about not just being better blokes, but the really gutsy day-to-day stuff about sexuality and sex. Lord, it saddens me that we haven't talked about this enough, and consequently we've got some of our brothers here who have struggled and maybe struggled unnecessarily. But I thank you that your grace and your mercy is bigger than that. And I thank you that you are in the job of rescuing. And I want to pray that for all of us, that you would rescue us and redeem our sexuality so that we can experience Genesis 1 and 2 relationships. Lord, as we go home, help us to be transformed in the way we approach the women in our life and how we approach sexuality. Pray these things in your name, Jesus. Amen. One closing thought I want to just leave with you. Nearly every bloke in this room will know John 3:16. John 3:17, the message says this. It's a bit abridged. Words of Jesus. The Father didn't go to all the trouble of sending his only Son into the world to point an accusing finger to tell you how bad you are. He actually came to put things right and to rescue you. Amen.